Well, hi and welcome. Thanks again for your kind words and the various follow-up emails that I've had. I wanted to first check with you, are there any challenges in the material or in reflecting back on what we've talked about that might be helpful to briefly address at this point, or other questions that have been raised in your mind as you think about applying this with your clients? Any particular challenges or things that just didn't quite make sense or make for an easy applicability to your clients? Anyone? One question that I've seen a couple of times and I wanted to address is just the very process of dealing with change. Because there's one thing that is ubiquitous for every client you will work with, because it's the same for you, that any change is a disruption in the normal order of things. It's a discomfort because someone is leaving a comfort zone, a zone of predictability and the default mode. Because once we do something, as we've talked before, once we do something repeatedly, our brain wires it to make it automatic when we do it enough times so that it becomes the default mode. So to look at the possibility of change, of doing something differently, then introduces a discomfort, and that discomfort might be read by the client as, well, that's my intuition telling me this is not the right thing, or this is validation that this is not the right pathway for me. So this is where you come in as a coach to help someone frame what they're experiencing as an understandable response to change itself, because that's expectable. Anytime we do something new or different, it's going to introduce change. And how you frame it is going to be important. We're going to be talking about that in a specific way in this seminar, and I want to mention it in a preface sort of way to give you a heads up to really listen for it, because I believe it's the most important and powerful component of the roadmap. The last step, the P, is program new identity. The most powerful force of the human psyche is that we return to our core identity. We do something different or introduce some change. Unless that's incorporated to how and who we see ourselves, we're going to revert back to the default mode, to our identity, because our minds and brains want to return to something familiar and already hardwired. So this is where you come in as a coach to help someone process that change and transformation of themselves and their identity, not just something that they're doing differently, but to incorporate the transformation of their internal organization of how they see themselves to add the new behavior, to incorporate that as an evolving new story of a growth mindset. So as you frame it in this way, then it can make a huge difference about someone incorporating it. Remember, we've talked about how framing is so very important. That, for example, your brain can't tell the difference between excitement and anxiety. It registers the same way. So how you frame it, if you frame it as anxiety, then it equals danger. You're going to flee or avoid it. If you frame it as excitement, you look for a possibility and look for how to incorporate that to take the next step to seize the opportunity and look at possibility. That's exactly what we do in coaching, is to look at a possibility mindset, not a problem mindset going the other direction. Just had some background noise. If you just came on, there's some background noise, whether you're on maybe a cell phone or a computer phone, if you would mute until you're ready to talk, because we're still in a discussion mode. So any comments or questions about anything that would be helpful before we launch into the seminar topic that might be helpful to look at for this new material?
Dave, just a quick question. This is Carol. I had a client last night. We had a session. And while the materials that you gave us mentioned the magical formula, her language was a silver bullet. And my question, you know, we're going to meet again next week. We're going to talk next week. But my question is, you know, this process, throughout the materials, it's a difficult process, change. But at what point do you start guiding and steering the client to really taking hold to some of the tenets of the roadmap and getting them to leave that story behind, or even to acknowledge that it, you know, it's an old story that does not serve them well, without you saying that to them?
Okay, yeah, that's
like good. How much time do you allow, I guess?
How much what?
How much time in terms of coaching, how many sessions do you?
Well, first of all, I'm glad you added at the end. I don't talk roadmap to somebody. I have used this as simply a way to do training to help you understand some of the algorithms of behavior, of how we construct a story, so that you can listen to it in your client. But remember, for the client, they're not writing a story. This is reality. It's the way things are. Story is our construct so that we can look at and understand the components. So I don't wait for any big overall abstract thing. Every time somebody says something that is a coachable moment, we look at it right there. Well, my anxiety stopped me. Then we look at that to look at how they were seeing something, because they created an anxiety, and then the anxiety seemed to act on them as if they were the victim rather than the author. So we look at that instant about maybe, I don't know, regular, I'm not sure, I can't make this up as good in an abstract way like this, but we may look at how to regulate states of mind. And this is something I wanted to mention to you, that this is, and I've mentioned it one time before, but this is something that I think you'll find beneficial, because the most powerful thing that we can help someone do is to regulate states of mind and to develop self-reflection, because that's what we're fostering. We're the catalyst of their developing self-reflection, not buying into some construct like a roadmap, but helping them move step by step. The thing that I mentioned before, I want to reiterate, it's a free webinar. It's like 30 minutes on the homepage of my website, Mentor Path. And it's about regulating states of mind and managing emotions, because this is going to be something I would guess with every client you work with, it's going to be some component of how they do that, because we all have many different states of mind. How we perform depends on if we pick the right one and if we've done deliberate practice in that state, or if we get disrupted by not regulating that, so that we don't have access to all that, all the skill and the developed experience that we have. So I would recommend that webinar to you to help with just the moment-by-moment listening, as well as using what we're talking about as a way to inform your listening. It's not getting anybody to buy in or to sign on or to introduce an abstract notion like the roadmap or a particular story, because, again, the client is not experiencing it that way. We have to go with where they are and to where they are. So here's the challenge. Some of you have heard this from me before. Draw a circle on a plain piece of paper. Now, inside that circle, put a stick figure. That stick figure is your client. Your challenge is to get inside that circle, because outside the circle, that client is not going to listen to you. You have to get inside the circle. You have to find some way to resonate with the experience, the primary challenge of the client. Then you can go someplace new. Here's the best supervision, and I know a few of you have heard this from me before. The best supervision, but still the most succinct way of saying this principle that I've ever heard. Many years ago, while I was still practicing psychoanalysis, I offered an interpretation to an executive woman that I thought was going to be really helpful. And she paused, and I knew something was up. And then she got up on her right elbow, looked back at me in my analytic chair, and said, "No, Kruger, first you've got to be with me before I can go someplace new with you." That's the challenge that we have with every client. We have to get inside that circle. So instead of starting where they say, "Well, I'm, you know, this is really what's challenging me," this, rather than starting with strategy and story, start with state first. Resonate with their experience or their challenge, and just simply reflect it back, because that creates a common ground. Then you can go someplace new together, because that's the model that we have as coaches that is, as a overarching principle, unique to our profession. We move ahead in a collaborative way. We're not experts. We're not consultative. In our framework, we move together with the client as point of reference, and to develop that client story, but not talking about story, but just listening contingently and having conversations that are contingent based on what the client says. You say something, and then the client says something. Does that begin to help a little bit with that question?
Yeah, actually, it really does. And thank you. Thank you for reminding me,
okay,
me of that. So I'll go online and take a look at the webinar. Thanks so much.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
All right, super. I'm going to move into the material because I want to save a little bit of time at the end. But remember, I mentioned that for our last seminar next week, I'll add on 10 or 15 minutes at the end. So be ready with any questions or discussion or challenges that you have. Now, that circle and that stick figure, that's also useful for marketing, because you have to get inside the circle of your potential client or customer before they'll listen to you that way too. So that little circle and stick figure, keep that little sucker around. That's going to be helpful. We're going to go on lecture mode now. Okay, as we discuss how to map or program changes, we're going to talk about step five first, map wellness strategy. We've already talked about recognizing authorship, your wellness story, own your story, assessing the plot and storylines, decide what to change. So we're going to move that ahead by talking about mapping strategies. So there are two workbook exercises I would suggest that you do yourself. 14 steps to edit your story and 5 steps to revise a storyline. Now, insight and understanding alone are not enough to replace an old story. How many people do you know who can tell you all there is to know about something, but they haven't changed? They're experts on diet, weight, nutrition, yet they have not changed and still struggle with it. Underlying causes are always present for any problems, often complex, multi-determined causes, But in coaching, our approach is to use causes, feelings, history only as information to focus on this moment, the understanding, the possibility, and the choice architecture. And people need nudges when they're least likely to make good choices. For example, for decisions that are difficult or rare, times they don't get feedback, when they have trouble translating it into understandable terms, or when they persist in reentering that old story, which etches it, or the problem, which etches it further every time. So, this, I think, might be helpful to you. And again, this is not to directly share with your clients. This is to inform your listening and your responses. There are six crucial elements to map change for this step. I think when you understand and incorporate each of these six, you have the outline to master a story of wellness or whatever other story you're working on. First, regulate states of mind. Now, I've mentioned that. I've mentioned the reference to pursue that. States of mind are like software programs. They're a mind-body state that determines how we perceive and how we process information and how we respond. So think about how many different states of mind that you have. Relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention. There's so many different states of mind, and each one is like a software program. It's internally consistent. It determines what you perceive, then how you process things, then what you do, and the behavior that you engage in if you do. So when someone, for example, is in an emotional state, they're marooned in their right brain, their feeling intuitive brain. The emotional brain hijacks the intellectual logical brain, and at times holds it hostage. So let's look briefly at how to regulate states of mind. The most important thing we can do to achieve success is to manage emotions and regulate states of mind. Consider this. What do these people have in common? John Belushi, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis Presley, Janet Joplin, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Kurt Cobain. They never learned the crucial success strategy of managing their states of mind and regulating states of mind without something external to do that. Using drugs, alcohol, or some other substance or process leads to significant compromise. Your state of mind, the particular software program you use and develop by deliberate practice, that's an entirely different seminar series and program, determines the meaning you attach to a stimulus. The meaning you attach then determines your behavior. Now, your state of mind determines the meaning you attach, so by changing the state of mind, you change the behavior. There are two basic ways to regulate state of mind, physiology and focus. Physiology is how you use your body, how you use like a deep breath to breathe in relaxation and breathe out any tension. The focus is what you focus on. It can simply be a focus phrase or a way of attuning to something specific. So these are things, and this is explained more in the seminar, the webinar that I mentioned. Here's a brief synopsis of this first principle. When Southern Utah University's new basketball coach Robert Reed arrived, his team ranked 217th in free throw percentage. That was lowest in their division nationwide, 217 out of 217. So during practice, he had his players develop a mantra, simply a cue, a focus, and a physiology. A cue is a word or a gesture. He had them, and when they got to the free shot line, dribble twice, have a focus phrase such as relaxed and smooth that would fit with what they're going to do to shoot, and to take a deep breath in to breathe in relaxation and breathe out any tension. So during practice, he would simulate game conditions. Because you don't get to line up and shoot 43 throws at a game and count your best. He would blow a whistle. They went to the line, shoot a free throw using the mantra. If they made it, they got to take a break. If they didn't, they ran four laps. In 2 years, the team was ranked number one in their division nationwide. So mantras can be very useful in various circumstances. There's a case that I present in brief overview in the webinar that I mentioned that is the initial work that I did to hatch the idea of the neural conditioning chart, which is a microsystem. Remember, we talked a little bit about the neural conditioning chart being a microsystem of management of a state of mind or an emotional trigger, simply. And every client you work with is going to have some emotional triggers, and you can decide if it might be helpful to use this. So mantras can help you get in an optimum state of mind for performance for whatever you do. And you may want to use a different focus phrase. For example, when I use a focus phrase, I don't have to anymore simply because my brain is rewired. My mantra was the cue of putting together my thumb and index finger and saying a phrase that would fit a situation, like before a keynote, to be relaxed and powerful, and have two deep breaths, breathing in relaxation and breathing out tension. Now I've done it enough that simply my brain has rewired. Simply putting my index finger and thumb together can be an instant way of getting in state. Now, you want your focus phrase to match what you're going to do. If you want to go to sleep more effectively at night, you don't want to be relaxed and powerful. You want to be relaxed to sleep. So think about how different situation. I work with pro athlete golfers use something different for a drive than they do an iron, than they do a putt. Think about what you want to do and what's going to fit. Okay, the number two element to map changes, the power is in the focus. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus selects a frequency. It's like saying all the channels of a radio or satellite TV are available, but we choose the channel, the frequency we want, out of hundreds of possibilities. We each transmit and receive a frequency through our thoughts. So if you want to change something in your life, change the frequency, change the channel, change your focus. Now, the bad news is if you focus on what you don't want, even trying to reverse it, it keeps showing up over and over because the unconscious does not know the difference between positive or negative focus. Now, quantum mechanics offers us some understanding of this. The quantum Zeno, Z-E-N-O effect, says the mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. The originator of this theory was a guest of mine on my mastermind group. With consistent focus and repetition, these chemical links in the brain become stable changes in the brain structure. In other words, it rewires. This concept offers explanation at a brain level for what we do, why a solution focus is more effective than a problem focus. These brain connections literally become mind maps and then influence what we do and even what we see. New neuronal networks and pathways are created when you focus on solutions. And we've discussed this briefly before. The already existing circuitry is further etched when you focus on a problem, which is why people can get stuck in therapy. Neuroscience validates the reality that it's not understanding the source of our thoughts or feelings that's most beneficial, but a focus on awareness of choice. Now, the law of attraction is based in neuroscience as well. If you lay a nail and a paper clip side by side, nothing happens. When you take a magnet and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and can pick up the paper clip. Well, the molecules of the nail are aligned in the same direction, creating a polarity. Same with your energy field. When all of you is going in the same direction and focused, you have power. Now, in the film, I'm sure all of you have seen the film The Secret. The adage is ask, believe, and receive. Now, I think that's two-thirds right. The law of attraction won't give you what you want, so you just have to passively receive it. It will give you the energy to sustain the process to create what you want. It won't send a Brinks truck up your driveway or align the lotto balls for you. Trust me on that one, I can save you some money. But you can align your internal molecules by focus and purpose to point to specific goals. It's a way to use your power to write the story you want. So instead of ask, believe, receive, consider this. Ask, believe, create. That helps us keep our jobs, by the way, the ABCs. My grandmother, my favorite grandmother, offered her critique of The Secret, the film, 5 decades before it was released. She wasn't a psychic. She simply said, wishes don't wash dishes. Now, the paradox is that we don't attract what we want. We attract what we focus on. Everybody wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity aligns your energy to pursue prosperity. Now, as I mentioned, your unconscious, your midbrain does not register positive or negative, just the focus. It's kind of like, in the old style camera, a print or a negative, it's the same image. Your unconscious is that image. So the power of focus is whatever you attend to or focus on, you align yourself to create. So be sure it's the right thing. I want to get out of debt. Wrong. The focus is negative. It's on debt. I want to lose weight. Well, the focus is on weight. Here's one that kept a lot of dry cleaners busy. I want to be really careful and not spill something on this new outfit. Dr. Joseph Murray put this very simply. Your unconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, I can't afford it, your unconscious mind works to make it true. Notice which people worry about illness, which people talk about pains or disorders. The people who are afraid of getting sick are the ones who get sick most of the time. That's what they focus on. What you worry about happens because you focus on it. So put energy into what you want. This is one of the basic aspects of coaching. Somebody talks about problems, we redirect to look at the possibilities early on in the session. Desires instead of obstacles. To fight something is to engage it, to add energy to it. This creates resistance. When you focus on what you want, what you don't want kind of falls away. It's kind of like your lap when you get up to walk. The energy we're talking about is not the energy of stamina or resilience, as in tired versus refreshed, but of energy field, this invisible, very real connection. Think about how someone's energy field tells you immediately whether they're warm and inviting, cold or stay away, charismatic, energetic. Quantum physics offers us still another paradigm. In addition to our individual energy field, there's a collective field, and you can tap into and resonate with this field, the quantum field of possibility. Einstein talked about this. He called it a unified field theory. Basically, he said the mind, the human mind and body are bundles of energy and interact with another person's energy field or with a larger group, the collective energy field of the group. This is how we can read people, focus our choices, determine the flow of our future. So I think a natural experiment of this, a natural study, is the NBA has 84 games every year, 42 away, 42 at home. Every team loses at least a fourth more games away than they do at home, some into the mid-30s. Every team, there's the negative energy field of away with 70,000 people, most of whom are against you, then it's not going to be the same. When the reverse phenomenon, you know, 75 or 80,000 people at a home game are all, it's a very different energy field. And there have been some sub-studies of this since I first used this as an example to look at how it changes the actual game, but that's a whole other matter. So the law of attraction is neutral and impersonal. It works equally for positive or negative thoughts, good things or bad things. You keep coming back to what you run away from because you engage it. You resist, you attract what you resist because you engage it with more focused attention. So the most important principle is to focus on what you do want rather than what you don't. Now, let's do an articulate your unconscious exercise. Do this test to see how it works. You're on lecture mode, so nobody's going to hear you. I'm going to make a statement, and then I want you, as soon as I say that statement, to say out loud, your wish is my command, and just to be aware of what you're experiencing. I'm tired. I'm late. I'm overweight. I'm eating healthily all day. I just work out and feel terrific. Now, be aware of your experience of broadly the two sets of things, of negative energy and positive energy, and how your unconscious is saying exactly what you said out loud. Your wish is my command. Your unconscious is going to follow your focus. So if you focus on something negative, it's going to feel a little depleting. If you focus on something positive, it can be energizing. There have been studies on how if when we end the day with gratitudes, it enhances a whole sense of well-being and jacks up the immune system. Now, thinking this way is not magical. It requires discipline. That's why a lot of people don't have spectacular results. So here is a quote that I wanted to share with you also in terms of this. Wisdom is learning what to overlook. That's from William James, the father of American psychology. The other quote is another one from my favorite grandmother, the secret critic. She said, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. So here's one final vignette on focus. You may have heard this legend. One evening, an elder Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, my son, the battle is between two wolves inside us all. One is evil, anger, envy, jealousy, sorrow, greed, arrogance, self-pity, resentment, lies, false pride. The other is good, joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, generosity, compassion. The grandson thought about it for a minute and then asked his granddad, which wolf wins? And the old Cherokee simply said, the one you feed. So, three. Third component, visualize changes. There's an entire chapter from a book of mine in your addendum that is on a scientific way of creating a vision using all of the senses and a scientific way or a systematic way, let's say, of creating affirmations, the story that go along with the visualization. So the visualization, when you repeat it, of creating a positive image of a successful attainment, let's say, of a goal, and all of the sensory detail that you have about it, every bit of experience of successfully arriving at that, and review that and experience it first thing in the day, last thing at night, you've created a future memory. You've rewired your brain for that success. So you simply have to figure out a way to back into it. This looks at creating a way to get around being afraid of success or afraid of change or not thinking that you can do it by simply creating the vision. You've already created the experience, so it's already there in your brain. You simply are strategically creating a systematic way to attain it in reality as you have in your brain. And your brain can't tell the difference between what you imagined and what comes in through the optic nerve. So it is just as real in your brain so that you can create it in a systematic way. Every image draws you toward its conclusion. An image is kind of like a goal. You can create a negative image, or you can create a positive image that your brain will then draw you to. If you picture yourself in a particular success experience repeatedly, you create that experience. So that's something to think about and look at that. It's a brief chapter with a couple of illustrations, but it's just a systematic way to go about creating a vision and creating the affirmation. The vision, rewiring your brain. The affirmation is revising your mind software, the story that supports the vision. So here's a focus and visualization example, and I'd like you to do this now rather than just listen to it. We have and will talk about the importance of putting things in an output channel. That's so important because it creates a closure in the brain. Whenever you take in something, it's important to put it in an output channel. A very simple, very recent experience of this, University of Waterloo did a study with two groups equally divided. One group read a passage in a book out loud. Another group read the same passage silently. They then took a test. The group who read it out loud rather than silently did 40% better on the test. So here's the focus and visualization exercise. Focus on the weight that feels good to you. Picture specifically what you'll look like at your ideal weight. Look at those pictures you've created daily. And I would even suggest twice daily, beginning of the day, end of the day. Write your ideal body weight range. Keep it pretty narrow, just, you know, knowing that your body is going to fluctuate 2-3 pounds in most days. Focus on the body you want, your ideal weight range, your ideal body. Now, remember, it has to be your body at ideal weight. You can't lose weight and suddenly have Alicia Keys' body. So it's your body at ideal weight. And it has to be your body now, not your body 25 years ago. So, you know, there's, you know, visualizations are scientific, but they're not magic. Don't focus on losing weight. That's a negative focus. Don't focus on fat thoughts. You know, like slow metabolism, hereditary body size, slow thyroid, the spirit of Great Aunt Sally, the channel, the curse of large leg. Think of positive focus in a here and now way. Look at and admire your body. Be grateful. Have gratitudes that focus on your body. Keep in mind the pictures that you have. When you eat, be entirely present to the act of eating and to your body. This is a part of choice architecture. Remember we talked about the study when people were aware of each bite they took, they began to ask, is this bite in my best interest? Instead of taking a bite and kind of zoning out. Visualize the thoroughly chewed food assimilated throughout your body. That's going to be hard if you have a big piece of cheesecake because you're going to have to stick with that sucker all the way through. It's easier with broccoli because, yeah, I'm doing the right thing and this is going to good places. Think and feel as though your picture of yourself and your goal is manifest so that you create your body as your life intentionally. And remember the ABCs. Ask, believe, create. Now, here's a very simple example of this, and I know a few of you have heard this, and an example of the art of a vision. A group of executives here in Houston asked me to do a seminar with them about writing a first book. So they wanted to do at least a half-day seminar on how to write a first book, so to do some of the basic things. The very first thing I did was to ask them if they had seen, if they had ever seen a yellow Jeep. One person out of 24 raised his hand, so I asked him to do an exercise with me, and I did a visualization of a Jeep. So we went through a visualization. Let's do it now, and then you can see if it affects anything you do. Close your eyes and get in a very relaxed place. Breathe in deeply. Breathe in any relaxation. Breathe out any tension. Now, picture a yellow Jeep. Look at the Jeep as you walk toward it. As you walk around behind it, notice the bumper, the paint, the tires. As you walk around to the front, notice the headlights and the grill, the windshield. As you come around to the driver's door and reach out to open it, feel how cool and firm it feels. And look at inside, the seat, the dash, the windshield. As you get inside, be aware of how fully and firmly the seat's holding you. Be aware of the smell. As you grab the steering wheel, feel how firm it feels, and look through the windshield and imagine driving. As you turn it on, listen to the sound of the motor. Feel the vibration of the Jeep as it's running. Grip the wheel again, one hand on the gear shift, and imagine driving. Now, as you turn the motor off and get out, listen to how firmly the door sounds as you close it. As you walk away, look back one more time to take in the total picture of the yellow Jeep. Now, I ask the group if any of them happen to see a yellow Jeep within the next week, would they get in touch? Would they send me an email or a text or an email or a call and leave a message? In the first 3 days, 22 of the 24 saw a yellow Jeep. Now, what happened? There weren't suddenly more Jeeps in the greater Houston area, but they had coded their radar to make seeing a yellow Jeep a possibility. There are millions of bits of stimuli that come in to our brain all day long. Our reticular activating system is impinging our brain, but we focus on only certain things. Be aware, for example, right now, of both of your feet. Feel how they feel inside your shoe. Move it back and forth, your feet on the carpet, on the floor, and be aware of that experience of how warm your feet feel. Now, that's been coming into your brain all day long, every day. You just haven't attended to it. By giving a specific focus, you become more aware of it. So that's what happens, and that's what I mean by whenever you see something, it comes in through the optic nerve. When you visualize it, it activates the same part of the brain, and the brain can't tell the origin. So, in the film, The Lookout, Lewis, a blind man, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Now, he did use stories, so I'm going to have to take back a little bit of what I said at the beginning. Lewis said, "Start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going. Our possibilities are limited only to the things that we allow ourselves to see and to consider." So the key elements about maybe creating a vision: repetition, the neural networks dedicated to your vision have to be renewed and repeated regularly. Consciously incorporate a new vision into an ongoing story to be ultimately metabolized as a part of yourself, your identity. Be very specific about the experience of achieving the goal. Now, another way to put it immediately in an output channel, write it down. Research on memory tells us a new idea or fact lasts an average of 40 seconds in short-term memory, then it's gone, unless you write it down to review it or say it or do something to put it in an output channel. So here's an example of an application of this. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During the time he was in prison, he was essentially isolated and had no physical activity. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer. He had broken 100 on two occasions. He had 299s. Everything else was triple digits. So to preserve his sanity, he learned to visualize golf. Every day, he would get up in his cell, in his mind, and get dressed, drive to his favorite golf course, warm up, smell the flowers, take a shot. He would spend about 7 hours a day, every day, playing golf. He did this for 7 years. When he was released from captivity, playing golf every day, 7 days a week for 7 years, his first outing, he shot a 74. And that's the power of a vision, of mind over matters. So, mapping changes. Insight changes the brain. We've touched on this before. A moment of insight, in coaching we call it an aha experience. If you look at someone's brain hooked up on an fMRI, during that experience, three different parts of their brain lights up, and they are vaulted into a state of mind that is more synthetic and integrative and creative and wanting further insights. Now, with the same person, when they're given information, a directive, facts, an order, nothing happens. No part of the brain lights up. So as important as insight-induced change is, it's the sustained attention and the integration into one's identity to transform, again, how they see themselves along with the changes on the surface. Five, take action. Here's this principle from Vincent van Gogh. If you hear a voice say, "I'm not a painter," then by all means paint. Then that voice will be silent. Now, the world won't pay you for what you know. It will pay you for what you do. It rewards action. To analyze, plan, think, organize are important, but payday comes with action. Gratification of your purpose comes with action. Winners develop a plan, set it in motion. It may not be perfect, but they can self-correct and keep moving forward, learning from mistakes and producing results, a growth mindset. This is why a group of the highest and highest ranking or the brightest people anywhere with all kind of degrees can plan and figure something out, but struggle to make it happen. Meanwhile, the guy who may have barely finished the first semester of community college owns a lot of real estate on the west side of town. So the most important thing about a goal is having one. The most important thing about a plan is to stick with it. And you can stick with it better when your needs and ideals are identified, when it fits with your passion, and all of you is going in the same direction. Wisdom is to know the right path. Integrity is to take it. A clearly defined goal can capture imagination and inspire passion. One extra degree of effort in business and in life can separate the good from the great. At 211 degrees, water's hot. One more degree and it boils. 51 publishers turned down Richard Bach to publish Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He took it to number 52. And I heard this story directly from the guy who was talking about it. 141 publishers turned down a guy with a really unlikely title for a book, Chicken Soup for the Soul. he decided to publish it himself and sell it out of the back of his car. To get what you've never had, you'll probably have to do what you've never done. And six, identity transformation. This is an adumbration of what we'll talk about next time with Program New Identity, but a new experience or an idea must be focused on consistently and frequently. When attention is consistent, that's when brain circuitry is stabilized and hardwired. The mindset of identity then incorporates the new experiences to integrate it as part of an evolving self, a component of one's identity. Otherwise, it's not integrated and prone to be dismissed as not me, or maybe attributed to luck or circumstance. So, here's a summary now of what we've talked about this seminar, combining steps 4 and 5. This is in your outline too. Decide what to change and map the changes. Since old patterns are hardwired, it takes consistency of focus on new experiences to change the wiring. Concentrate on new behaviors, on possibility, not on problems, in order to create and activate new brain pathways. Identifying a problem won't solve it, and it may mean that you're headed in the wrong direction. Create new ways of thinking to simulate brain circuits with an eye on the prize to begin to lay new mental maps. Now, I want to come back to what I said before, because I'm hearing how you may be hearing that. You have to keep in mind problems, the challenge that your clients are having, because the only thing they will pay you for is for you to help them with problems they can't solve themselves. Now, you don't do that by focusing on problems. That's the zinger. We can discuss more about that, because I may have made that confusing. Regulate states of mind and manage emotions to promote brain power. New insights and adaptations occur through balanced learning, left brain plus right brain, and intellectual and emotional. Facilitate insight rather than give advice or directives, instead of ghostwriting the client's story, in other words. When diverted to an old feeling or behavior, redirect ideas and energy flow to the new ideas, or to at least possibility. What's the possibility here? As you've interrupted someone from reiterating again why the problem is such a problem. Remember, you have an unlimited number of timeouts. This is not the NBA. That's the agreement that I have with every client with whom I do mentor coaching, is I ask them if they will agree to let me interrupt them so that we can consider something at the moment, the instant, that will be more valuable and save some time. Remember that the power is in the focus, and that permanent change is from the consistency of that focus. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. Remember, focus aligns and directs energy and efforts. Emphasize positive, adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Knowledge is inert until it's activated. Put it into behavior. Put it into a systematically planned output channel. And finally, think about your new experience and evolving self, how your new experiences require thinking of yourself, your identity in essence, in an evolving way. This is what distinguishes the old story from the new story. The new story is the present create. You can only create a new story being in the present moment. Okay, we're in discussion mode. If you'll manage the background noise, I'm eager to hear questions or comments or clarifications about anything we've talked about. Does this begin to address more specifically, had some questions, Kelly and Carolyn, particularly about managing story rewrites and how do you get clients to focus on a continuing progress, not focusing on problems or recreating old behavior. Remember, this is what we naturally do, is to return to the familiar. So that's going to be a natural. I need a management of the background noise. I hear you moving paper, and I don't want that to be a distraction. Anything you do, movement of anything, will be picked up. So any other questions, comments, or anything that would be helpful to talk about directly now?
Excuse me, Dave?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I
can. Oh, you can. Great. I wasn't sure. I was traveling, looking to realize my goals. Anyway, so at the end of the session, I asked for feedback.
I'm sorry, this is who?
I'm sorry, it's Carolyn. I apologize.
Carol. Okay, go ahead, please.
Yeah. So I asked for feedback on the session and, you know, to see if the takeaways that she had asked at the beginning, if she felt comfortable, and also with the action plan and the homework assignment that I gave the client. And so at the end of it, what she said was, well, I noticed that despite the fact that I wanted to stay in a space that was, you know, about my old life and all the old things that had happened to me, you were encouraging me to focus on, you know, the things that I do well and, you know, where I want to get to and how I can do that, you know, if I'm willing to release and let go of those old storylines. And in any event, so I read the assignment for tonight, and I was really happy that, yeah, okay, well, I think I was headed in the right direction, and the client felt that that she had gotten out of it what she needed to get out of it and is eager to really kind of do the work of it because, you know, there's no silver bullet and it's not happening overnight. And you may take two steps forward and three back, you know, that's just the nature of it.
Okay, may I coach you for a moment?
Really, please do.
Well, first of all, it worked. And that's the bottom line, no matter how fancy the theory or what all we know or don't know. The bottom line is, does it work for the client? So the answer here is yes. So keep that in mind to juxtapose against anything that I would say. There are some clients, when you ask for feedback, are going to hear it as tell me how good I was, or looking at it to take the point of reference away from them to the coach. And I would say the client pays you to give the client feedback rather than vice versa. Here's a way I might think about framing that. Based on what we've discussed, what are you taking away, just in a brief summary, so that the client synthesizes and integrates what has been discussed in this particular area of focus. They put it in their output channel. So it's about them, because this is the process that you want to foster, because this is what they're going to be doing, ideally, the other 7 days and 23 hours that you're not working with them. So this is a model that they're downloading to review and reflect and synthesize and integrate things themselves. And then, rather than give them homework, I would suggest, based on what you just said about what you're taking away, what makes sense to you to do next before we meet again? So I would ask them to put this into a specific plan and then ultimately a commitment. And if I write down nothing during the entire session, I would write down maybe the two things the client commits to do, because if they don't begin there, that's where I'll begin next time, because I'm the accountability partner. And they'll come to know that when we open to say, well, bring me up to date, and then let's talk about what we're going to focus on today. The bringing me up to date, ideally that's two questions, by the way, but bringing me up to date is to say, basically, I'm your accountability partner to review with me what you committed to do, because if they didn't do what they committed to do, that's the session today, because that's their issue. They're showing you what it's like to be them. They commit to do something and they don't do it. So that's your coaching focus. If they do it, then you pick up where you left off and move on. Now, does that make
yes.
sense based on...
Well, it doesn't, and
I
have to apologize.
For that, so
No, you did, and that's fine. No, and it's absolutely fine. Because what I didn't say is, that's exactly what I did. I'd never say, hey, make me feel good about me. But really, to get what she needed to get out of the session and to have her be able to articulate it, which she was able to do. And I took the shortcut of explaining that part, and I should have. But at the tail end of it, the homework, and I used again a label, but the homework was not homework that I gave to her, but around several comments that she made as part of her discussion with me. And at the end of that discussion, after we talked through some of that, and I gave her some other ways to think about it, or I didn't give her other ways to think about it, I asked her to reframe it in a way that was more positive, and she did. And then I said, would you be comfortable doing the homework of really giving some thought to the issues that she was raising that really are stifling her ability to move forward? So it was around those ideas. So you're absolutely
right.
And I short-circuited that, but.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
Sorry.
I appreciate it.
And I'm sorry I took up the time. I didn't mean to do that.
Or clarifications that we didn't get to, jot them down, and we'll do it either at the beginning of next time or in the additional 10 or 15 minutes to have just a discussion of the concepts, the ideas, the application, or any challenges that you have with your client. So if you have time, remember the additional minutes at the end of next seminar. So we'll pick up right here next time. Thanks again very much for all of your feedback and kind words in the emails and your participation and energy. We'll pick up right here. Have a great rest of the week. See you now.
Thanks, you too.
Bye. All right.